Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my special guest is Alice Mazur. Alice is a social worker. She is married with 6 grown children. She's been involved with the AIDS Mastery Workshop for 24 years and works in the field of HIV, which has become her life passion. She is a facilitator for what is now called the Mastery. She started an AIDS service organization, an ASO, in Bennington, Vermont. She's a volunteer at the Damien Center in Albany, and she has facilitated an AIDS discussion group in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. She is also a Reiki master through whom God channels energy and God's love. And with that said, I'd like to welcome Alice. Alice, I'm glad you made it in. How are you tonight?
Great, David. Thank you very much. I just came from a Methodist conference in Maryland and got in the door, and here I am.
Good. Well, sorry about the confusion with the phone numbers, but I'm glad that I got a hold of you, and all is well. So tonight, we want to explore your spiritual journey and your life's passion with AIDS work and the AIDS Mastery. I'd kind of like to get a little bit of a background on you. You did provide me with more information in your biography, but rather than read that on the air, I'd like to hear it straight from you. So if you'd be willing to, would you tell me a little bit about your religious and spiritual upbringing?
Okay. I grew up as a Catholic, Roman Catholic, spent many years as a Catholic. I was very, very fortunate in that, having heard other people's experiences, I was extremely fortunate to have wonderful priests to work with, and nuns as a child. So they sort of began my journey in many, many ways. I had the last priest we had before we moved to Rehoboth Beach was in Hoosick Falls, and Father Tom, it was so welcoming, and everyone was welcome in his church. And so that was my beginning of my spiritual walk. I then began it, in saying that, as a teenager, I wanted to know more. I always knew there was more. And I went with my friends to the Dutch Reformed Church. I went to the Episcopal Church, and always, you know, listening and wanting to know, what's this about? And then I have spent some time, I studied for 10 days with a Tibetan Rinpoche in Massachusetts in a Franciscan retreat house. So another part of my spirituality is Native American, and have gone with friends to a sweat lodge, Yawipi ceremony, have done many of these things, meditated with a Buddhist monk. I felt always and still feel that God comes to us in many and every way. There's never one particular way. It can be wherever we find him.
I like that.
I also found very much in doing what was called the AIDS Mastery Workshop and what we now call the Mastery, that as people began their journey within themselves to look at who they are and what they want to do with their lives and to look for healing, that they always found spiritual. And they would often ask us, is this a spiritual retreat? And in reality, there was no belief system. It was the people who came finding themselves within themselves. And I believe that's where the spirit dwells, within
us. I believe that, too. I believe that, too. Do you believe that God is a part of each of us?
Oh, yes, I do. I do.
Yeah, I think that... That, to me, was a real eye-opener, and a lot of people don't accept that. They believe that God is something that's out there, and to me, God is part of all creation and part of each and every one of us, and I believe we're all reflections of God, that each of our souls makes up the rays of the sun that is God. And so that's just my own personal belief. I really liked what you were saying about all the different ways that you've found God and that there are many different ways, because there's so many people that are locked into their own rigid belief systems, into religious dogma, where they believe that there is only one way to find God. And, you know, I hear some fundamentalist Christians say to me, unless you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, you're going to hell. Well, I believe in Jesus, and I consider myself Christian, but I reject that kind of limited thinking because I believe that we're all God's children. What do you think?
I totally and completely agree with you. I mean, if you look in the face of any human being, you will see that you can find God there. And this past winter, Bob and I began going to the Methodist Church down here in Rehoboth Beach. It's called Epworth Methodist Church. And we worked in the soup kitchen, and we worked in the homeless shelter. And those people who came in and come in to get fed and for a place to stay in the very cold winter, and you look at them, and if you don't see the face of God and the walk of Jesus in them, you're missing something. And that's what I loved about the people who also came to work there, you know, opening their arms to people that others reject, you know, and that's so sad. And I, as you say, sometimes I see, hear fundamentals as well. You know, they're against gays, they're against blacks, they're against Jews in many ways. And I look and say, but you say you're Christian. Who did Jesus reject? No one, no one. And so I, you know, sometimes I struggle with that. And working with the Mastery for many, many years, well, not everyone who came to make the Mastery would be a homosexual. Many were heterosexual. It was learning to come together, support, and be there for each other, because each one is a child of God.
That's beautiful. Let me just say to you, Alice, we have had a couple of people call in. Are you willing at some point in the program to take questions from callers?
Sure, I'll do my best to answer them.
Okay, well, I'll let the caller on the line know that we'll do that sometime later in the show, so please hang in there. I don't have a producer that can talk to you, but I do see you. And there was somebody else that called in. Please feel free to call back if you want to speak with Alice Mazur, who conducts and facilitates AIDS Mastery classes, now called the Mastery classes. Let's back up again. You told us about your early religious and spiritual life, but I'm wondering, what was your early concept of God? What did God mean to you in the beginning?
Okay, you know, and I sort of been asked that question before, and someone asked me actually, what do you think of God? Well, growing up in the Catholic Church, there was a lot of praying and kneeling and so on. I often remember my concept of looking, of course, we had the crucifix, and looking at that and saying, God must suffer a lot. And I was fortunate to have a priest tell me, God does not suffer. We do have suffering at times, and sometimes of our own being and making. But then as I grew in that concept, I realized that God was everywhere. And I think I learned that very, very early. I mean, I was a rambunctious child. Let me tell you, if there was a tomboy, I was it. Trees were a great place to spend time in. But I began to realize that God was everywhere. And I don't know how I came about that. Grew up in Schenectady, New York. But it just seemed like if he was around, he was there. He was all over. I never put him up in the sky. I don't know how. It just did not seem to make sense.
That's remarkable, because so many people have put him up in the sky, and so many people have looked at him as if he's sitting on a throne judging us. And you're one of the first people to tell me that you had an alternative view of God early on. That's remarkable.
Yeah, I really never, of course, there were always the pictures. As a young child, no matter what religion, that's true. You saw God up on a throne and angels around him and so on. And I do believe in angels, by the way. I think they're pretty special. But I don't remember ever thinking of him as being up there.
Yeah. Well, tell me, how does God work through you? I mean, I can take an educated guess, but I'd like to hear you tell our audience how God works through you.
I believe that when I take the time to listen, God is speaking. He always talks to us, tells us. If I take the time to watch, if I get going like a crazy person, as I say, going from thing to thing to thing, and don't take the time to stop and listen, I may miss the message. And God comes in many ways. He doesn't, it's in other people. We're very fortunate here and we have a condo in Rehoboth, and looking out, and there's a pond. And I can see where God has acted and he's worked with the ducks that come and the birds that come and his creation, and stopping and looking at that. God speaking. Maybe sometimes he's telling me to slow down and look. But I believe that he comes to, especially me, in many ways, and especially when I'm listening. Taking the time, the children, sometimes when you're looking at children, you realize, wow, what a creation. Look at them. They're so alive and so full of happiness and joy most of the time if they're not in trouble. But I can see God. I'm saying that. I'm laughing because there's a little guy that's two next door trying to always climb the pole. But I see God in many ways, yes, that he comes to me.
Well, I believe God works through each and every one of us, and that we're all channels, and that he certainly works through you. I've seen him at work through you when you've done the AIDS mastery. I see him work through you when you listen to people. I see him speak through you when you speak words of truth, like you've been speaking as I perceive them to be words of truth. And I'm sure he works through you when you do your Reiki. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I would. I love doing Reiki. I was very blessed, really, to found someone who lived down the street from me in Bennington, Vermont, who was a Reiki master teacher, and began my studying with her. And as the years went by, you go from Reiki 1 to Reiki 2 to Reiki 3 and Reiki master teacher. And in doing Reiki, a couple of things come to mind. the first thing that always came to mind was when Jesus was healing, he often touched. And when I'm doing Reiki, I am pulling through me God's energy, whether it's from the infinite universe, whether it's from the earth, well, everything around me is God's energy and love, and I'm pulling that in. And as I put my hands that have been attuned to Reiki Master on someone, that Reiki is just, the energy is just going through me. I'm a conduit. And I have been very, very, again, blessed and fortunate to see wonderful things happen through Reiki. And so I find it, if nothing more, sometimes I'm doing little 15 or 20-minute sessions for a lot of people in a workshop or whatever. They relax completely, sometimes, and in 10 minutes can go to sleep. And I know that when they're relaxed and at peace and when our body is quiet, it has the opportunity to heal. And that's what I love most about Reiki, that I'm just the conduit, and it's all in God's hands.
For people who don't know what Reiki is, can you explain that, and can you also tell us some of the wonderful things that have happened?
Well, in explaining Reiki, because like many things, it's very difficult, it's a hands-on energy. There's a story that goes with it about a very beautiful man with Dr. Aizui, who founded Reiki in his search because a student asked him, why can't we heal like Jesus? And he didn't know. Went on a quest, and as the story goes on, and I'm going to shorten it, of course, he finally, after many years of searching, went back to Japan, where he came from, and asked a very wise man who told him to go to the mountain in a cave and spend a period of time there. And he did, and he meditated, and he prayed, and he meditated, and he prayed, and nothing happened. And the last night he was there, ready to totally give up on everything, he lay down, and there was a terrific electrical storm. And when he woke up in the morning, there were symbols on the ground in front of the cave. Mm-hmm. And as he went down the mountain, he stubbed his toe, and he grabbed his toe, and immediately the pain went away, the blood went away, everything. And he knew that this was a very special gift that was given. And began his practice in Japan. Second World War was coming. He knew there was going to be problems. He gave it to Mrs. Hayakawa in Hawaii. And from Hawaii, it made it to the United States. And there are many good Reiki practitioners. And many wonderful things happened. I have been with people who, it helps neuropathy for people who have the virus. We've done it many times at the Damien Center in Albany, New York, with my friend Regina, who I think you know as well. And,
oh, yes.
And Harry. We would do it together and take away neuropathy, bring people to peace. Harry and I went for many, many months on a woman and brought her cancer into remission. You know, those are sort of the big things, but the little things were often we brought people to peace, to a place where they could accept where they were at. And there were even times when people were dying of the virus that we could bring them to that closure with a peace of mind, and, you know, feeling in a safe place. Those are just some of the things that go on with Reiki. I do it for women down here in the Senior Citizen Center, usually maybe a couple times a month, and I have had the opportunity, again, to have them lessen their pain and have them feel at peace, and even people who have lost whether it's a husband or a mother or someone close to them, to bring them to a place of peace through Reiki. So I find it a very wonderful gift, and it is a gift, and it totally comes from God.
all gifts come from God, as I see it. And, yes. You know, when you were talking about bringing somebody into remission from cancer, I was thinking about my own belief in physical disease, that it manifests from emotional and spiritual distress. And I like looking at the word disease as if it is dis-ease within oneself. And that, to me, that seems to be the explanation to me on why things like Reiki can heal people of physical disease. I don't know what you think about that.
I totally believe that. I think that it is a dis-ease. It's something within us that's gone awry. Sometimes it's through stress. Sometimes it's through things we do ourselves. And, you know, and I never judge mental and in it, but sometimes people who smoke or do drugs or they bring the dis-ease within themselves. And, again, I'm not judging anyone. That's not my place. But I believe sometimes they bring things on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen two or three people that I have known very, very well who would not give up smoking and ended up with things like lung cancer and, you know, cancer, you know, of the throat and things like that. And I often thought, you know, maybe if they didn't smoke, that wouldn't have happened. And in saying that, my own mother-in-law died of throat cancer from smoking. They made it very clear. And that was one of the saddest things for all of us.
Oh,
but,
sure.
This was before I had Reiki, so it's quite a few years ago. So but as I was learning about Reiki and spirituality and so on, I began more and more to realize that, you know, we have to take care of our bodies and our spirit, you know, as body, soul, and spirit. They're sort of one.
They are one. They are one. It's a balancing act, isn't it?
It is.
Any one of those things is out of kilter for me, I have to stop and deal with it. And when you were talking about addiction, I was thinking about how that's really just a symptom of a deeper distress. And that, you know, that is why people with addiction find help from spiritual programs is one example of help, because they have basically got a spiritual and emotional disease that has predisposed them to a physical or process addiction. I just finished a book called Occam's Razor, which is a simple solution to freedom from all addictions, and I'm very pleased with it, and it's going to be out on Kindle soon. But what I do is propose an alternative or a maintenance program for people that are looking for a simple solution to a difficult challenge, a difficult problem, if you will. But I like to look at things as challenges instead of problems or struggles. I think it's so important for us to focus on the solution instead of the problem. So that book is going to be out soon, and I will be talking about that more on upcoming shows. But I just wanted to pick up on what you were saying about, you know, the cigarette smoking as an example, because that's been a lifelong challenge of mine. And as I've shared with my listeners, I have been in recovery from alcohol abuse for 26 years and sexual addiction. Yeah, so, you know, it's been such a blessing in my life to have made it to this place, because so many people don't. And I don't understand that, except that I believe that addiction goes away in God's time, and that it's here to teach us a lesson or teach others around us a lesson that has something to do with the spiritual path that we're on and that is part of the mystery of life. I don't know.
I agree. And, you know, it's something that we dealt with for many, many years in the mastery, our age mastery, you know, but we call it the mastery now because it's life's mastery. And many people who came were addicted, were alcoholics. We had one rule. They could not, we asked if they were in addiction, we wanted them clean 3 months. And then, because we were going to be working on the issues that brought them to addiction. You know, people just don't up and born and say, oh, guess what, I'm going to take drugs. That things happen in their lives that they're trying to cover up because they don't know how to deal with the pain. And
right.
It can be horrible pain. We don't often realize how bad emotional pain can be. It can actually be physical. And in trying to cover that up, you know, they'll do drugs, they'll do alcohol, whatever. So in the mastery, that's one of the things we dealt with in every workshop. We get to the root. And that's when I say when people go within and find themselves, and there they can find the strength to stay in recovery. And, you know, and we always push NA and AA. I have left flying out of a mastery after someone saying to me at the end of the session at 5 o'clock or whatever we'd end, 6 o'clock, I need to get to a meeting. And I'm telling you, we'd get in that car and go as fast as we could. But because it was important. It was important. That was part of their journey. And in the beginning, many people who are in addiction know it's a daily thing. Every day, sometimes it's hourly. But the mastery was a thing that would, they'd come back over and over again. The mastery helped me see. The mastery, you know, gave me the insight into why I was doing it. So why I had a very big love of the mastery.
Well, yes, and that has been so apparent to me as I've observed you working in the mastery. I'm wondering what drew you to work with people that had HIV disease and AIDS?
I started out as a volunteering in VA hospital in Albany, New York, and there were two people there. Way back when, and I don't even remember, it was before GRID, whatever that was back there. Anyway, the first man, they took me upstairs into palliative care and was a young gay man, and they didn't know what was wrong with him. He was very sick and failing, and they were, you know, doing everything they could, but he was literally dying. And the second was a young man downstairs, and they had him in isolation. And I had a suit up in a green suit, you know, I don't know what, and go in to see him. And the poor man, all I could see was my eyes, and all I could see was his pain. Again, they did not know what was wrong with him. So me, being very curious, I said, I got to find out about this. That was it. And I made a phone call to Ed Kubler, who had just completed his training as a facilitator for the AIDS Mastery, and said, what can you tell me about AIDS and HIV? And his response to me was, I have a workshop you need to make. And in Oklahoma City, in 1990, I made my AIDS Mastery Workshop. And my husband, Bob, came with me. There were five of us. There were 25 people there. Only five of us didn't have the virus. The other 20 people did. And I listened. And I listened to the pain. I listened to how they were beginning to realize, you know, what they were doing. Many of them had turned to drugs and alcohol at that point, but many of them were just dying. And the mastery was bringing them to a place, you're not dead yet. And I remember a woman, Mona, who I will never, never forget. They brought Mona in the back of the room on a cot, and that's where she laid to do the workshop. And finally, as we went through, and she was very much a part of it, she began to sit up. She began to, you know, do things. And I remember Stephen, the other facilitator, saying, Mona, what do you want to do with your life? And she said, I want to dance.
Ah.
And he brought her to the front of the room, and she danced with him.
Wow.
They gave Mona 3 months to live. She wanted so much to live to see her granddaughter. She had gotten a virus through a blood transfusion. She desperately wanted to see her granddaughter being born, that was going to be born. Sadly, Mona lived 3 years. It wasn't 3 months, but in 3 years, there still wasn't the meds that are out there today. And I was at the quilt in Washington, D.C., and they announced her name. And I knew, again, one of the heartbreaks that came in the early days around the virus, but the mastery made her realize she was still alive. And that was the important thing at that point. She would have probably died in 3 months. But she was alive. And
that's a beautiful story.
Oh, I'm tearing up here talking about it because I very much loved that whole scene. That I loved Mona and loved Stephen. Stephen was a facilitator we lost to the virus. Very wonderful man. We lost two or three facilitators to the virus because it wasn't the meds that are out there today. And I'm so thankful that they're there. But now I'm looking at people telling me there's an increase in HIV again, simply because there's no education and prevention.
Well, let's talk about that in a little while. I think this would be a good time to take a call from the caller. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about HIV today. And I'd also like to hear you describe more about what's involved with the mastery. So I'm going to bring the caller just disappeared. I guess they got cold feet. That happens. And maybe they were just listening in.
Maybe he answered your question.
That could well be. Who knows? Would you tell us more about what the mastery is involved and how people can get in touch with somebody that might be conducting a mastery?
Okay. Mastery is a two-day, at the least, program. We try to start Friday night and just introduce and begin the workshop, but sometimes with schedules, especially if we have people who are working or are moms or something that with childcare, we'll do a two-day mastery. And beginning on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock with a breakfast, something that simple but good and nourishing breakfast, and starting the workshop at 9:30, and we'll go till 5 o'clock. And we'll do that for 2 days. We have lunch provided at each workshop as well, and snacks, but the workshop would begin, as I say, introducing, and then we begin to take people pretty quickly on a journey through their life so that they can begin to look at the different times in their lives and what might have happened. And sometimes that can be difficult for people. They're looking at things they don't want to look at, or have tried to forget. But sometimes going back and doing it or bringing it up to that place where it needs to be is when the healing comes. We also do, because sometimes we're doing discussion, one-on-one with people. So we're having that kind of going on. We also do a piece where we're talking about the reality in life. What's reality? Is it the things that people told you who you were? Are the things that people put on you, whether it's, we have all kinds of systems, we begin in a family system and we'll be the school system and a religion system and sometimes a work system. They're all systems. And in all of those various places and systems, people put things on us, tell us things about how we are, who we're supposed to be, and what we're supposed to do. And we take a time then to look at, who are we really? You know, we are, each one of us have our gifts, and each gift is what makes up the whole community of people in the world. But if you have never had the opportunity to find your own gift, the Master gives you a time to do that. A safe place to say anything you need to say or want to say. A safe place to, again, search out, who am I really? And sometimes people go back to college. It's been a long time, and they're thinking that someone told them they weren't bright enough. Oh, you couldn't do that. And they find out, well, maybe I can. And then in 2 years, you're finding out they got their first two-year degree or, you know, have gone on to a four-year degree. They've found who they really are. And I think that is probably the basis of the workshop. We go through relationships, again, talking about all the relationships in our lives. And some of them very, very important. And, you know, sometimes we're looking at things, do we know who our parents really are and were? Things like that. And I'm making this very, sort of simplifying it a bit, you know, because it's sometimes very heavy stuff. And we just go to, we end 2 days. The first day we really work very hard on helping people go within. And the second day we began the process of helping them to take that, move forward, and do whatever healing is necessary, because they're going to go back out into the world. And giving them the tools to deal with it. When people say, you can't do that, giving them the tools to say, oh, yes, I can. So,
what are some of the tools?
Well, we do some, like I said, we have, do discussion. When I say tools, some of them it's very hard to explain because we will
okay.
do, I'm trying to think something that I can tell you very quickly that we might do. We do meditation. We even do on floor, people laying on the floor kinds of meditations, and we're beginning to bring up all the emotions we have. Every emotion we have, how do we deal with it? What is it bringing up, and what do we want to say with that emotion? So that's one of the ways that we will do it. Going to the mastery quickly in my head here, because as I said, 2 days of it, and the reality is a tool. And we have a little, I don't want to say skit that we do with that, but we'd use a chair. And we call it a chair is a chair. And that's reality. And what do we do with that? We just can describe the chair and tell them all out there, but what are they going to attach to that chair? What kind of baggage that people told them, tell them are they going to attach to it? And what can they put down? You know, get rid of. So, when I say tools, there are some of the bigger tools are through visualization or meditation. Sometimes you'll find people, what I think is a really great tool, getting other people in the group involved into talking to each other. Wait a minute, I see this about you. Do you see it? We have them write love letters to themselves. One of the hardest things that people can do is write a love letter to themselves because they don't always know what they like about themselves and what they love about themselves. So that's another tool. Time to think, David.
You're doing great. You're doing great. How can people get more information about the mastery? Or how can they find out a way that they might be able to become involved in it?
Okay, they're going to be having a mastery in Albany, New York. Larry Steffler, and I don't have his phone number in front of me, I wish I did, but he can be reached through the Damien Center in Albany. They would give him, you know, his phone number. They're going to have a mastery, I believe, in the fall that will be the first one since I left Albany. And so they're gearing up for the...
And Damien is spelled D like David, A M like Mary, I E N like Nancy. Is there any clearinghouse nationally for, because this program is going all over, is there any clearinghouse?
There, Oklahoma City has a website. I think that the Mastery in Albany used to have a website, and like, again, I don't know if it's up and running because I left 2 years ago, and, you know, it was so valuable that they decided to pick it up through the Damien Center. Perry at the Damien Center wanted it, but I know OKC has a website. I think New York City might have a website. So it would be, I think, down there, still under the AIDS Mastery Workshop, but I'm not sure. Don't know who else has a website anymore.
Well, perhaps people could just Google the Mastery and see what they come up with that way.
Exactly.
Well, what is happening with HIV these days, Alice?
I wish I could say, David, it's sort of breaking my heart. When I get statistics now again, that the 35%, that's a lot to me, rise in HIV, especially with young gay men. And I think, where did we miss out? I do know that our funding, way back even when I was in Bennington, and that's been at least 12 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, when I had the AIDS service organization there, they had begun to cut funding for education and prevention. It's been they're not putting it out there. They don't know. They think it's a chronic disease, and, you know, hey, if I get it, I get it. Well, they don't realize what goes with that. It's not just one pill a day. Sometimes it's side effects, the long term of taking the pills that they're not going to, they do different things to different people as well, you know, it's your own immune system. So they just think it's they don't believe that it's something they shouldn't have. And they're not taking precautions, they're not talking about it. Even if they have the virus, and they might not know it because nobody's talking about it. It's been left out in left field, literally. I started the workshop down here in Rehoboth Beach area, and we did one up in Wilmington last October, and we're going to do another one this October down this way. And had someone who had no idea they had the virus or could spread it. Well, you look at that and say, wait a minute. testing. You know, I do know they do test in Rehoboth Beach. And I'm hoping people take a lot of advantage of that, because once you find out, you can take care of yourself. You can get healthy.
Right.
I know, you don't have to end up in the hospital with somebody telling you you might die. So it's really, really important that we get that word out again and talk about it and not shove it under the rug or push it in a closet, you know. We want people to be healthy and well.
Aside from young gay men, what other populations are most affected?
It's mostly young people. It's mostly.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. It's young people in general don't have the information about HIV.
Isn't the African-American population affected quite a bit?
Oh, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm. No question. Mm-hmm. Again, but usually there it's drugs. Mm-hmm. Not always, but most often it's because of needles. And there are new exchange programs, but, you know, again, if you don't have all the facts and information, you might not even know. And they should be, I mean, they say they talk about it in the high schools, if you often ask high school students, it's like, yeah, that's part of the whatever health class. Well, what did it mean to you? I don't know. And I think, well, you should know. You know? I know when we did have the AIDS program in Bennington, I went into the high school and we talked to the kids and brought programs in and did all kinds of things. And, of course, we were talking about something not all the schools will let you talk about condoms, though most of them will today, but back then it was sort of an issue. And we were talking about condoms, and they began realizing how important it was. I did not, thank goodness, get any young people that were HIV positive, but they came in and told me the birth rate in Bennington, Vermont went down 50%, the unmarried teen
really?
Birth rate went down 50%.
Wow.
Yeah. So they
oh,
were
that's
listening.
Great.
They
yeah.
were listening. In saying that, I have to be careful, too, because of confidentiality, but one of the college had quite a high rate of infection. So, really, education and prevention is huge, and we don't have it. Often, too, when finding schools, and again, not to knock the born-again schools or, you know, like that, again, not being judging, but they don't want their children to know about this. They don't want them to know about sex. So consequently, I cannot tell you how many workshops we have had young people in who became infected that came from those churches.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had no information and then went out, whether college, out to the world. And then I remember one young man in Albany, my heart was broken. And then he was thrown out. Then they get thrown out of their church. So, education and prevention is huge in my mind.
Let's talk about a different slant. What do you think is the spiritual significance of HIV and AIDS?
This is going to be just my thinking, really. I think it has nothing to do, because people have, often I've heard them say that it's a sin. People are being punished and for their sins. That sort of can push me over the edge a bit, you know.
Mm-hmm,
I think that many people who have the virus, many people who have around HIV become very spiritual. Again, when they find out who they are. And I think that's the most important thing. Then they find a very deep, deep spirituality that's very beautiful to be around. They have deep faith. They know that God had a big part in saving them, to take care and taking care of them. And as I said earlier, I believe in angels, and I often think their angels come and help bring them through that. You know, and because it's tough, I do not want to ever hear anyone condemn because of their sexuality or, how they got a virus and how they got sick, because oftentimes, even if people were doing drugs and alcohol to cover up pain, it was that initial pain that someone else put on them that brought them to that place. And that's when we should be reaching out to them spiritually, not religiously, although some religions do it very well. They just reach out but don't put anything on them. Here, you know, we're going to offer you help. And that's really my take on it. The pain and suffering that people got from, getting AIDS and how they got it often came from the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And, so what do? Judge and condemn them? Absolutely not. That's when we reach out in love. And it's
God's
love.
Certainly what,
yeah.
That's certainly what Jesus would do if he was here today.
Exactly.
You know, that would be one of the populations that he would be reaching out to today. like he reached out to all the outcasts of his day, the lepers and so on and so forth. And I think that love certainly is a big part of the equation. People coming to love themselves, and then they can open up and accept the love of God. I know that it was very difficult for me to accept a loving God until I stopped judging and condemning myself. And that's such an important thing. And I heard Elizabeth Kubler-Ross back in the early days of AIDS offer something that struck me as profound. And she said something to the effect, and she was an expert on death and dying, for those of you who don't know. But she said that AIDS is here to teach us a lesson, and the lesson won't go away until we all learn to love one another unconditionally. And I just thought that was beautiful.
That's very profound. It really is. And I studied a lot of her stuff because that was, again, my practicum was in death, dying, and loss. And she was a very remarkable woman. Yes. And it is love. We really, really, if we reach out and love, well, that's the bottom line. If we all loved one another, the basic message of love God, love yourself, and love your neighbor as yourself, if we all loved, all these other things wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that if we all practiced the golden rule, we wouldn't need the other commandments. All we have to do is do unto others and unto ourselves as we would have them do unto us. And if we did that, there would be no need for the Ten Commandments.
Well, it's so true, David. It's so true. Yeah. It's just amazing, isn't it, that something that simple we just can't seem to get.
Have you ever had a faith crisis, Alice?
You know, I can't say that I really had a faith crisis ever that I know of. I always knew, always in my heart, I knew that God was there. I mean, I knew sometimes maybe I was distancing myself for some reason. Something went wrong and I felt sort of lost from what was going on in my life. But I knew God was there, and it was me that was not reaching out. It's sort of a faith crisis, I guess. But I don't know. I know, and I'm going to say this because growing up Catholic, I have a very deep belief in Mary. And people say, do you pray to Mary? No, no, no. I will pray and ask her to pray for me. I've always felt that if she was Jesus' mother, as Scripture tells us, then maybe she's got an in with him. So if I really felt like I was a little bit not connecting, I would say, Mary, I need help. Would you pray for me? And
Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, the word connection is so important. You mentioned that, and that strikes me as something that's important to talk about, because it's so easy for people to become lost in their own lives, to become isolated in a sense from their feelings or from other people, shut themselves down. And unless we do open up and unless we are there for each other and help each other and reach out for help when we need it, we are, in a sense, lost souls. And so connection is so important. And that if people can accept that we are all part of God, that's how we can embrace God and invite God into our lives.
Oh, I totally believe that we, as we become more, I often picture humanity on a sort of a string. I don't know how to explain it, all connected, maybe a web, a string of a spider web or something, and we're all connected by that throughout the whole world. And that's why oftentimes, you know, when there's pain someplace, you know, we're feeling pain. and disruption, and everything is a little bit off whack because something has happened in that string of people throughout the world. We're all connected. We're all part of God's plan. And sometimes it gets pretty, pretty sad when we hear things that happen in around the world, you know. And then, at least I do, I often feel it in my heart for a minute or two or whatever, or carry it for a day thinking, oh, that makes me so sad. Why did that happen? And I think it's because we're all connected and we should be, you know, when we pray or we meditate or if we take a few minutes at least every day to just meditate. And it doesn't matter what it's on. It can be on what's happened that day in the world. How can I pray about it? Or it can be, I really need to go within myself today and get myself together. But I really think it's important that we take a period of time every day and do it. You know, sometimes it's not, if it's only 5 minutes, getting up 5 minutes earlier in the morning or staying up 5 minutes later at night. But each day, that little piece. And something I heard. Yeah, I heard something not too long ago, I thought, and I do it every day. I say, thank you, my God, for your blessings of yesterday, of your blessings today, and I ask for your blessings of tomorrow. And that's sort of my motto these days.
I think gratitude is such an important piece in terms of experiencing the abundance of God's blessings and staying in a place of positive vibration. A lot of times people can't even see the blessings in their lives, and all they need to do is look at, you know, do you have breath? Do you have health? If you don't have that, do you have food? Do you have shelter? I mean, there's so many basic things that people take for granted. What would you say to somebody who's trying to find God?
I think it would be sitting down quietly talking. I think if someone is trying to find God, I would again ask them to take the time and listen. Take the time to watch. See what's around them. Take the time to look at the people in their lives. And realize that, where did it all come from? You know, all these things that happen are for a reason. And I think if someone's trying to find God, I would lead them. I mean, I would lead them into what I believe. Talk to them about what I believe, not lead them into it. I may even take them to church with me. I'm finding this Methodist church that we're going is so open to everything and beautiful. And I would just ask them to pray. And I don't mean formal prayer. Talk
right.
To who you think God might be. Just talk to him and see if you get an answer. And I'm sure you will.
Well, thank you, Alice. We've come to the end of our hour. And there's more I would like to talk about, but we've covered a lot of ground today, and I really thank you for your presence, and you are indeed a present to me.
Thank you, David. It's been an honor to be with you this evening. I look forward to seeing you.
Well, that would be nice. It's been too long.
Yes.
So again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
Yeah. You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.